ready. Good morning. This is Commissioner Susan Weefall. The commission is holding its regularly scheduled meeting. Today, it is December 17th, 2008. The commission is meeting today in the 12th floor in our hearing room in the State Capitol building. I do have one announcement that I'd like to make now at the beginning of this meeting, and that is that the commission has received a proposed settlement agreement from NSP that just came in 5 minutes ago. And so the commission is not going to be ready to answer questions about the proposed settlement agreement at this time. I can tell you that on page 8 of the proposed settlement agreement, it does say that they are, as a result of this these adjustments, the proposed settlement would agree to an increase of approximately $10,431,000 or 7.1%. That is in contrast to the approximately 14% increase that NSP had asked for in this rate proceeding. The commission will be holding a work session. We had already scheduled that this afternoon at immediately following the informal hearing that is going to be held regarding Otter Tail case that's before the commission at 1:30. But immediately following that, the commission will be holding a work session on this settlement. That means that we'll be meeting with our advisory staff, and we'll have a chance to actually go through the settlement, read it with them, and to determine what questions the commission has about this settlement before we make any determinations. So we just need a chance to read this and to have a chance to study it, and we'll be having a first opportunity to do that this afternoon at following the informal on the Otter Tail case. All right. With me today are my fellow commissioners, Commissioner Tony Clark and Commissioner Kevin Kramer. I'll go to them for any opening comments.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning and welcome. I move passage of items in the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Going to the regular agenda. SW1. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, the conclusions of law and order, issuing certificate of public convenience and necessity number 5387 to Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, Inc., authorizing the extension of electric service to the Doko subdivision in Kidder County, North Dakota, case numbers PU08345, PU08346, PU08347, and PU08693.
Second.
Now, on June 13th, 2008, Montana Dakota Utilities submitted request to extend temporary electric service to the following customers: Ryan Edwardson of Steel, Corey Fonta of Steel, and Mike Mittleiter of Steel. And then on June 27th of 2008, I authorized the issuance of temporary authority permits to MDU to serve those specified customer locations. And then on July 2nd, 2008, MDU filed an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to extend service to those, to Edwardson, Fonta, and Mittleiter locations. And then on July 7th of 2008, we received a protest and a request for hearing on the applications from Chemelectric Cooperative of Linton, North Dakota. And then on July 16th, the commission issued a notice of hearings scheduling the public hearing in September. And, of course, we had 10 issues that we consider on those cases, including from whom do the customers prefer electric service, et cetera, including which supplier can best serve orderly and economic development, which of the available electric suppliers will be able to serve the location in question more economically and still earn an adequate return on an investment, et cetera. Then on August 14th, MDU submitted a request to extend temporary electric service to another customer, and that would be Chad Olson of Steel, North Dakota, and he owns 8 additional lots in the Doko subdivision. So then on August 25th, MDU filed an additional application under North Dakota Century Code for PCNNs to extend electric service to those 8 lots in the Doko subdivision. So at this time, when the commission held its hearing, we were considering the Doko subdivision and 11 lots in the Doko subdivision. Now, I'm not going to go through the whole order. This was a very interesting case, as all PCNN cases, all territorial integrity cases are. In this particular situation, both of the companies had been in serving this area for a very long time. Montana Dakota Utilities had a distribution system and substation were installed in 1946 in Steele, North Dakota. And Chem Electric has had transmission lines since 1968, and a substation was built in 68, and both companies have updated their facilities since that time. It turns out that Montana Dakota Utilities serves 444 customers within a two-mile radius. Chem serves 59 customers within a two-mile radius. We found that both companies were able to reliably provide service to the customers in question. On the question, which of the available electric suppliers will be able to serve the location in question more economically and still earn an adequate return on their investment? The commission took a very close look at this particular question, and we spent two pages discussing this in our order. The final finding is that the commission finds that MDU and Chem can each extend electric service to the Doko subdivision and return an adequate return on each company's respective investments, but MDU would serve the location more economically. We find that which would best serve orderly and economic development of economic service in the general area. We find that extension of service by either supplier would serve orderly and economic development because in this case, neither one is crossing the line of the other, which is always a test of this, et cetera. But MDU would extend service to Doko subdivision at a lower cost. Therefore, extension of service by MDU would best serve orderly and economic development electric service in the general area. Neither would result in wasteful duplication of service. Excuse me, that's the one where we talk about crossing the line, not in the other issue. And so the final finding, number 40, the commission finds that MDU's application should be approved because MDU would extend sufficiently reliable service more economically and at a lower cost to customers. Extension of service by MDU would best serve orderly and economic development of electric service in the general area. And all the customers within the subdivision prefer electric service from MDU. And so, therefore, our conclusion is that we have a jurisdiction over this matter and that we will be issuing the certificates of public convenience and necessity to MDU in this particular case.
Go
ahead.
Okay. This really was an interesting case because, by and large, both utilities demonstrated that they could adequately provide service, that there wouldn't be wasteful duplication, and came down to very few factors. There really were no factors of the 10 that Chem prevailed in, but there were a few that MDU prevailed in, not the least of which is, of course, customer preference, which we always struggle with how much weight to give that, but in a case where it's very close, that becomes pretty important. And then, of course, just the economics of it and the orderly economic development. And so I think it was a good job by both entities, both parties, frankly, and all parties involved. But that's
Fisher
good
Clark.
Oh, I thought so, too. The when the commission looks at one of these cases, there are – I feel like I'm reverberating. When the commission looks at one of these cases, there are 10 different subject matters that we're supposed to look at and perhaps put a little check mark by which company we thought prevailed in them. In most of these, it was a tie. Both companies could have served this area, but, of course, the commission's job is to decide for one or the other. There's no yellow button on TIA cases. And so it does come down to just a very few issues, the customer preference one, and probably, in my mind, most importantly, the issue of who can serve it most economically, and that just becomes a numbers issue where you run the cost estimates to serve that particular subdivision for each utility. In this case, it was cheaper for MDU to serve it. And so on the basis of that, that really, in my mind, is what tipped it in MDU's favor.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. SW2. I move the commission up adopt the order granting trade secret protection to Otter Tail Corporation for for information relating to cost information contained in the calculation of revenue requirements on Otter Tail shares of the Langdon Wind Energy Center facility and the Ashtabula Wind Energy Center facility, case number PU08742.
Second.
Now, Otter Tail is asking for the following general. This is their description of the nature of the information sought to be protected. Cost information contained in the calculation of revenue requirements on Otter Tail's shares of the Langdon Wind Energy Center facility and the Ashtabula Wind Energy Center facility contained in Attachment 3 of Otter Tail's application for approval of the annual renewable resource cost recovery rider and the approval of the 2009 cost recovery factor. Otter Tail states that the confidentiality information sought to be protected has been maintained by Otter Tail, and they state that the information is not disclosed to the public or to persons other than employees or authorized agents of Otter Tail, et cetera. Under North Dakota law, trade secret, there is a definition of trade secret. And commission staff filed a response to Otter Tail's request for trade secret protection. And our staff believes that Otter Tail's application satisfies the requirements of North Dakota Century Code Chapter 4725-101, which allows the commission to grant trade secret protection in this proceeding, and that the information Otter Tail seeks to protect qualifies as trade secret, as that term is defined in law and in North Dakota law. So there is a process that the commission has in place that provides a means for interested parties to review trade secret documents upon signing a non-disclosure agreement. And that is important in this in particular case, so that people do have an opportunity to do that as long as they don't use it in competitive ways. So, therefore, the commission orders Otter Tail's application for trade secret protection is granted. And this order, of course, does not constitute precedent for subsequent trade secret decisions made by the commission. I recommend that the commission approve this.
You know, it's interesting when we think about competitive advantages, we often think about one utility versus another utility, yet in a situation where we see a lot of development, we really need to protect ratepayers from price escalation due to a lot of information being available by vendors, contractors, construction companies, whatever it might be, that if they know this information can actually might cause them to bid higher or raise prices. So it's very important in protecting not only the companies but the ratepayers.
Now, I would like to just make a few additional comments here on this. This particular case is the one that the commission is holding an informal hearing on this afternoon. Customers received information about this particular case only on last Friday or Monday of this week. Otter Tail made a special effort and sent out a letter at the commission's request to ratepayers. As you remember, last year, Otter Tail customers were very concerned about increases in the fuel cost adjustment. And in this is a rider, a renewable resource cost recovery rider, which appears in another separate line item on their bill. And so the commission is proceeding very carefully in this case. And this is part of that care with this trade secret protection, analyzing this very carefully as to whether it meets the trade secret requirement. And I feel that it does. But we are going to be talking about the customer concerns about this issue on our administrative agenda this after following this meeting.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Now we will go to SW3. It seems these days that almost every case that the commission has before, there's a great deal of public interest, and that's good. That's good. But it does create extra work for our staff and for the commission.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. SW3. I move the commission adopt the order approving electric service area agreement and issue certificate of public inconvenience and necessity number 5386 to Otter Tail Corporation, authorizing the extension of electric service to customers in areas adjacent to the city of Wahpeton, as established by the service area agreement, case number PU08804 and PU08851. Now, I'm happy to announce that there is another electric service area agreement. I believe this is the fourth one that the commission has approved, but don't hold me to that. Jerry's shaking his head. Yes.
Third.
It's the fourth. We have the MDU one, the two Cass County ones, and this one.
Now this one.
Fargo,
all right.
Upton, Mapleton, Kindred. Yeah, four.
Four. Number four. All right. So I had that number right. And this has to do with Otter Tail Corporation Dakota Valley Electric Cooperative filing a joint application for approval of a service area agreement to establish service areas and designate service locations to be served by Otter Tail and Dakota Valley within the city of Wahpeton, North Dakota, and areas adjacent to the city of Wahpeton. And the applicants further request that Otter Tail be issued a certificate of public convenience and necessity, authorizing it to extend service to locations within the Otter Tail service area as set forth in this agreement. And we held an informal hearing on this, and the commissioners took a close look at the areas that have been designated as service territory in the city of Wahpeton by both of these parties. This has previously been approved by the city of Wahpeton. The public has had a chance to comment on this. The commission received no comments from customers. We did ask at the hearing whether either of the entities, Dakota Valley or Otter Tail, had received comments themselves from customers who were concerned about this. At the hearing, they informed us that neither one had received concerns about this particular area service agreement. Everything seems to be in order today, and I'm pleased that the process seems to be working and that we have an agreement between these two parties, which it's before the commission to approve, and everything seems to be in order.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, and if you're interested in seeing the map of that area, we have that, and we'll be able to share that with you after the meeting. All right? Okay. And then we come to SW4. I move the commission issue a notice of hearing, public input session, intervention deadline in Otter Tail Power Company's electric rate increase application, case number PO8862.
Second.
Now, as you remember, Otter Tail, this is my quick facts to go over the Otter Tail case. Otter Tail requested a 5% rate increase on November 4th of 2008, a 4% interim increase was requested, and the commission has acted on that and has already approved that. Their last general rate increase of 15% was authorized on January 10th of 1984. The stated need for this rate increase is largely a result of investments in generation and transmission. And on November, the hearing now is what we're doing today. We're issuing the notice of hearing, the public input sessions, and the intervention deadline. The hearing is scheduled to begin on April 27th, 2009 at 9 a.m. in the commission hearing room. And, of course, we'll be hearing the traditional issues. However, of course, I will not be here, but Commissioner Koch will be here. All right. We also will have public input sessions that we have scheduled. The commission has determined, since there's a lot of interest in Otter Tail customers in this particular case, to hold two public input sessions. The first will be held on February 10th of 2009, and the second will be held sometime in March that will be determined at the admin meeting following this particular meeting. And they'll both be held at 12 noon, and they'll be held at the locations below. We think both of them are going to be held at these same locations, but Tom is going to be verifying that once we select the date. Devil's Lake at the Lake Area Career and Technological Center, Washburn at the Washburn Public School Boardroom, Jamestown at the James Valley Career and Technological Center, Wahpeton at the Richland County Courthouse. We anticipate that the meeting in Bismarck will be held here in this room using our new equipment. However, we have arranged with the Department of Agriculture in case there's any snags so that it would be held on sixth floor if for some reason this is not available at that time. Now, this is also important. Anyone wishing to become a party to this proceeding must file a petition to intervene by February 27th of 2009. We're holding the first public input meeting before that intervention deadline so that people have a chance to learn more about the case in case in to give them information that they may need to determine if they wish to intervene. That seems to take care of all the items in on this particular agenda item.
All in favor?
Aye.
SW5. Otter Tail's fuel cost adjustment is what's on the agenda under this item. And the Otter Tail, as a result of this change, the electric bill for a typical Otter Tail residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours per month will increase by 45 cents for bills rendered in the month of December. The cost of fuel for Otter Tail customers will be 2.7 cents per kilowatt hour in the month of December, which is much better than it was last year at this time. Actually, no. It's slightly above where it was at the end of December. The big hike took place in the first part of January last year. All right. So it's above where it was last time, but it is below where it was in January of this year. Okay, that is the items in my agenda. Now we'll go to Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you, KC1. I move the commission approve bond release number 3 for surface coal mining permit number GRGR8403 held by Geo Resources, Inc. to release all reclamation liabilities on 50 acres located in portions of Section 8 and 17, T154N, R100W, Williams County. A monetary bond reduction of $180,000 is approved, and it will become effective January 20th, 2009, unless a formal hearing is requested.
Second.
These 50 acres of mined land up at the Geo Resources mine, which is, of course, a Leonardite mine, has an industrial commercial post-mining land use. It is owned by the city of Williston and is adjacent to their landfill, and the city is going to use it for expanding its landfill. Geo Resources mined this area from 1993 through 2005, and since much of the area will not be used by Williston for its landfill for a number of years, the spoils have been smoothed out, the high walls have been sloped, and some grass has been planted to avoid erosion in the meantime. The industrial commercial post-mining land use means that the 10-year vegetation or revegetation liability period does not apply, and of course, it's also noteworthy that this is the last final bond release we will do for Geo Resources because, of course, the rest of their permit has been transferred to Leonardite Products Incorporated.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. KC2. I move the commission approve bond release number 3 for surface coal mining permit number BNCR9401 held by BNI Coal Limited for the Center Mine to release all reclamation liabilities on 11.62 acres of industrial land located in a portion of Section 5, T141 North, R83 West, Oliver County. No monetary bond reduction was requested as part of this release, and the liability release will become effective January 20th, 2009, unless a formal hearing is requested.
Second.
Now, this 11.62 acres is also industrial post-mining land use. It is owned by Minn Kota Power Cooperative, and was used by Minn Kota previous to BNI using it. It was used for temporary storage of ash and other materials. Previous to that, it was used for a settling pond for ash. Then a few years ago, BNI took it over to use for a rock crushing facility to be used in their mining process. They no longer need the rock crushing facility there, and so it's going back to Minn Kota to be used again for temporary storage of bottom ash and aggregate materials. Again, the 10-year revegetation liability period does not apply because it is zoned industrial.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And finally, KC3 are some cost of gas charges. First of all, MDU is decreasing its propane cost of gas charge by $3.293 per decatherm. The cost of gas will change from $14.66 to $11.37 for January bills. For a typical January customer, the cost of propane in the bill will be about $55.98 lower than last month and $89.64 lower than January of last year. Of course, again, as always, Propane tends to follow more closely the market price of oil than does natural gas. With that in mind, MDU is increasing its cost of gas charge by 97.9 cents per dekatherm compared to last month for natural gas. The charge will change from 636 to 734 per dekatherm. And for a typical January customer, the cost of natural gas in the bill will be about $16.64 higher than last month and about $17.24 higher than January of last year. That ends items in my portfolio.
Commissioner Clark.
The variable in those gas charges is always the weather. And the weather hasn't been kind this last month, so.
My furnace hasn't stopped running for days.
TC1 has been withdrawn. Moving to TC2, I move the commission permit VCI Company to relinquish its designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier as approved by the commission in case number PU0528 in its designated service area, case number PU08886.
Second.
VCI is one of those many companies that for years had applied through the commission for authority to do business in the state and had received an ETC designation. VCI does not have any customers in North Dakota, so it wishes to relinquish its designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier, and that is something that is permitted after a few conditions are met under the Telecommunications Act of 1996, among them the ability for another ETC to serve in any area, and in this case there are those ETCs still serving.
All in favor?
Aye.
TC3, I move the commission enter a contract for services provided by Liberty Consulting Group, Inc. for the review of Quest Corporation's Performance Assurance Plan, case number PU08920.
Second.
The Performance Assurance Plan, as we all know, is related to Quest's ongoing obligation to provide wholesale services to competitive local exchange carriers. As part of that, Quest has to make payments when certain standards are not met. Those payments are made both to the competitive companies as well as to the state of North Dakota. By this action, we'll be adopting a contract to, along with a number of other states, 11 of the 14 states in the Quest region, audit those performance indicators and the performance payments that Quest has made. There was one modification to the agreement that staff drafted, and I think it's a good one. It's a special provision for North Dakota, which relates to if for some reason the legislature were to terminate or we would have a lack of funding for this particular audit, then we would have the ability to unilaterally opt out. I don't anticipate that will be the case, but our funding for this is provided through a special fund, which is funded by the payments that Quest makes to the state. So if for some reason circumstances outside our control, we don't have access to that money, then we could opt out.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that ends items in my portfolio.
All right. There's just one thing that I didn't mention, Renew, regarding the agreement, the area service agreement. There are a number of customers. There's just a few that are presently served, let's say, by Otter Tail that would be in the area that is now going to be served by Dakota Valley Co-op, and those will continue to be served by Otter Tail and vice versa. All right. Are there any questions?
So if I understood you correctly, each of the two cooperatives is going to keep the customers it now has.
That's correct.
This regulatory agreement just goes forward.
That's correct.
And that's where mm-hmm. the legislature's strong emphasis on harmony supersedes wasteful duplication, perhaps, but mm-hmm. Makes good sense.
There's just a handful. There's just a handful, yeah. Very few, but it is important to note that those customers know if there's an article written about this that they will continue to be served.
Is there now? I was thinking about the previous ones. I just want to make sure my recollection is correct. We have Bismarck, with MDU and Capital Electric, mm-hmm. Integrated with Xcel and Cass County Electric.
Otter Tail and Cass County.
I beg your pardon. Mm-hmm. Mapleton.
Same.
Otter Tail, Cass County mm-hmm. Electric. Now Wauffin and Otter Tail. Mm-hmm. Dakota Valley.
I think we haven't had any with Castleton,
wasn't it?
Castleton.
Yeah, it wasn't Mapleton.
I beg your pardon. Yeah.
Castleton. We haven't had any with NSP yet.
Is there anything pending?
No.
That you know of? Okay.
I was going to say
could
something.
Be.
I decided not. I was interested in the territorial integrity cases.
Sure.
The question that I had was, and Mr. Kramer talked about it a little bit. I mean, when you do have a situation where it's fairly even, Stephen, in terms of the evaluation of the factors, does customer preference take on added significance?
Well, actually, customer preference is a very important issue always in the case because we do not have the case come before us unless MDU customers, in this case, the public utilities customers, request service from the investor-owned utility. There would not be any case before the commission if those customers didn't prefer service from the investor-owned. If they said, we want service from, in this particular case, from the cooperative, we would never hear the case. There would never be a case before us, even if it was contested by MDU. There's no case. So customer preference is an important factor in the case coming before the commission. In my mind, the most important issue in this case then was that MDU could serve these customers more economically. And there was a significant difference in costs. And so that was the main reason that this case was decided in favor of MDU.
There was, I think, some precedential value with regard to this because it was a unique circumstance in that both companies could serve. They weren't crossing each other's lines. The cooperative proposed serving the subdivision in a more expensive way. Now, it was arguably a somewhat more reliable system, but the question is, was the way that MDU proposing to serve it absolutely adequate? And the answer was yes. The reason I say that there's some precedent to that, if the commission were to, you know, simply say that you always build to the absolute 100% most reliable, well, you can gold plate a lot of systems, and you can build a system in a way that would be outside of industry norm. And what it would do is it could encourage these TIA cases to go forward in such a way that it would encourage utility companies to gold plate the system because then reliability would become perhaps the one and only concern to the cost, to the detriment of cost and expense. In this case, the way MDU proposes to service it is certainly within industry standard. It's how most of their system is served, quite frankly, in the way that a lot of cooperatives serve it as well. So we didn't feel that there was any detrimental effect to reliability and that the added expense of how the cooperative was going to loop it didn't overcome the cost disadvantage.
Which is why the order actually states conserve it with sufficient reliability because it doesn't state with more reliability but sufficient reliability, and that really did become the standard. The question being asked was how reliable is reliable enough, and as opposed to who can be more reliable? Because you literally could have an arms race in these cases.
I understood what Commissioner Weifold said about the importance of public preference, but isn't it true that if you had one of these utilities with a significant service or cost advantage over the other, then the customer preference would be trumped?
That's probably correct.
I think that's a fair characterization.
Because customer preference is an issue in the case, but we have learned over many years that it is not the main issue that the commission can consider.
Well, and Susan's right. I mean, it's what initially kicks off this particular case. And I suppose if everything else was absolutely 100% tied, that could be the thing that tips it. But the reality is these are, when we grant to an investor-owned utility a certificate of public convenience and necessity, they are operating in the public's convenience. And so a private individual's you know, sole choice of who they'd like to be served by does not take precedence over all those other public factors.
I will tell you, though, Dale, when I first read the briefs in this case, my initial thought was this could come down to customer preference. It really did look like it could be the tiebreaker, but, of course, as always, upon further examination and having the opportunity to have witnesses and whatnot on the stand, you do find the other factors.
Are these the folks that are listed in the mm-hmm. motion, are they all homeowners in the subdivision?
Actually, there are three that are the Ryan Edwardson, Corey Fonta, Mike Mitleider. I believe they all have homes there. But the other person owns 8 lots.
Mm-hmm. Developer.
And that is Chad Olson.
And where is this location in relationship to?
It is west of Steele and south of I-94.
Okay.
And it is immediately adjacent to the city of Steele on the west side. You can see it from the interstate highway.
Yeah, now that you mentioned mm-hmm. it, I think I have seen it.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's some nice homes going in out there in Steele. And it's an attractive area.
The trade secret protection order on Otter Tail, I probably should have asked this question years ago, but something you said kind of triggered this.
Mm-hmm.
If someone signed a non-disclosure agreement to look at this information and had no intention of using it to compete with Otter Tail but might want to use it in another context, would that be allowed?
Well, I'm going to let Alana answer that question.
I have to check the rule, but generally speaking, you do have availability of reviewing the information. You simply have to then commit not to using it in a competitive fashion. That's where the violation occurs. I have to read the rule about whether there's a need. Whether there's a standard you have to meet for need initially, I can go pull it if you want me to.
The problem is, let's say if the media put this information in the paper, it may not be you using it in a competitive fashion, but it could be that someone who reads your article could use it in a competitive fashion.
Yes.
And so that is why that is why it's considered then trade secret.
Well, I was thinking, okay.
But you can read it. You can read it, and as long as you wouldn't put it in the paper.
I'm just thinking, why couldn't I? Because I'm not using it.
But I'm telling you is that other people who read it could use it in a competitive fashion.
So does the law cover that?
We'll have to have Alana check that for you.
No. But the media has gotten access to our trade secret protection a lot over the years.
Yeah. I mean, I've done it myself. It's just that I thought I was supposed to keep it myself, but I was thinking, well, why couldn't I? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess
I don't know either.
I don't know that our law goes that far. Other law does.
The bond release on Geo Resources, could you explain again what the difference is when you have land that is
sure
industrial?
Yeah, let's say if it's agricultural or grassland, you know, pre-mine use, and it's going to go back to pre-mine use. Obviously, there's the 10-year revegetation standard, and meaning, of course, that it has to prove that it's as productive, at least as productive as it was previous to mining. When the post-mine land use is industrial or commercial, then, of course, revegetation isn't so much of an issue, and that standard is no longer needed to apply. In this particular case, it's being used as ultimately going to be used to expand the Williston City landfill, but it'll be some years before the city of Williston uses it for that, so there is some reclamation being done, if you will, just to avoid erosion and safety issues.
Do you know the amount of the bond?
I don't. They didn't request yeah, that's the 180. Yeah, that's the other one. This 180,000 or 180,000.82
or something like that. So essentially the company will prepare the land so that there is soil erosion, but it does not have to
reclaim it following all of the...
No, and its liability is waived as well, because it becomes the city of Williston's issue at that
point. And eventually it's going to become part of the dump.
Do we have any idea how much less expensive a reclamation would be if you didn't have to do those things?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
It's a, yeah, it's a lot. I don't have any idea.
I mean,
right,
that's
off top
why
of my
this
head.
Exclusion is set up for only for industrial areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm
it
sure
makes
somebody.
Good sense. It
yeah.
makes good sense in those situations to have that, you know, that provision in state law, because in industrial area, we anticipate that they would be tearing up this property in the near future and using it for another use completely than would be anticipated with full reclamation.
And it would be a little silly to fill in a hole that's going to be used for a landfill.
And it remains under health department regulation that as a landfill and right. eventual closure, revegetation of that.
Yeah. So. Dale, your economic question, though, is probably a pretty good one. I suspect somebody knows, you know, that's in the industry knows exactly what it was. I'm sure there was a lot of testimony about it at the time that the reclamation laws were being debated and passed and what this would mean to the cost of electricity and all of those things, but we just kind of take it as a matter of fact nowadays.
About the trade secret protection, I'm afraid, you know, my brain was fried or something, but when you were explaining what kind of information it is, I really didn't.
I'll show it to you.
I didn't understand it.
Well, I'll just show you the definition
okay.
later, okay?
I'm interested in knowing
the
what
Undertale claims.
It's cost information contained in the calculation of revenue requirements on Undertale shares in the Langdon Wind Energy Center facility and the Ashtabula Wind Energy Center facility. That's what it is. It's cost information contained in the calculation of the revenue requirements.
So it's how much they're spending to build the thing.
That's right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Those things. It's two. Mm-hmm. Langdon Wind Energy Center.
And I haven't looked at it in particular. I know staff took a gander, but I would guess the reason is because lots of utility companies are entering into these types of deals with developers, and they're confidential. That's where you would have the competitive advantages. If you're another utility company and are able to look at that, there's a cost that you don't have to go through that Ottertail had to go through.
Can you explain to me what a non-impaired wire center is?
A non-impaired wire center.
Yeah, that's what it says. Has it not been drinking? Or?
No. Oh, this has to do with the one that was withdrawn?
Right.
Yes.
Oh, that has to do with whether the FCC's standard for whether there is an impairment from the competitor getting into that wire center exists. I mean, it's competitive access to the wire center itself. Is that close enough, Pat?
is there a reason why VCI company withdrew?
I suspect it's because they didn't have any customers in state, weren't serving any. So
I was just wondering, do they save like an annual filing fee or something?
They don't save any filing fee. We do. We did request of them that they update their registration to acknowledge that they're no longer providing service in North Dakota. But we don't require any sort of fee with that registration, I don't think, do we?
Well,
or is there $25 or?
I understand what you said about them not having any customers, but I imagine there's a fair number that don't have any customers.
Yeah, I think probably the main issue with ETC status is, you know, who knows what could happen in any given exchange, and they wouldn't want to be the last company standing in it holding an ETC status. You know, if they don't have any customers, they would become the default carrier at that point.
So
they'd have an obligation to.
So could it be a situation where they might some sort of extraordinary set of circumstances occurred, they might find themselves paying money that they otherwise wouldn't have to pay?
Well, if they're the only ETC left in an exchange, then they would have the obligation under the law to provide telecom services in one way or another to each person who wants them in that exchange.
And Dale,
yes.
I don't think you were here when I announced that Xcel has filed a settlement. And are not only Xcel, but the advocacy staff for the commission have entered into a settlement on the NSP rate case. And they filed that with us just 5 minutes before this meeting started. And so the commission has not yet had a chance to read this at all. So we're not prepared to answer any questions about it. But I can tell you that they're proposing that the settlement would be for $10,431,000 of revenue increase, or a 7.1% increase. And that is in contrast to the approximately 14% increase that was requested by Xcel at the beginning of this case. So the commission will be meeting in a work session following the Ottertail informal this afternoon, and that's when the commission will have a chance to sit down with our advisory staff and to actually then go through this and to ask questions about this of our advisory staff and determine what we need to do to proceed next. So we will be reviewing this at a work session this afternoon at sometime after 1:30. All right.
I know you wouldn't answer questions about it, but what was their interim?
The interim rate increase was higher than what, let's just say this. The interim rate increase was higher than what is being proposed in the settlement. So if this settlement moves forward, then there would be a return of some monies to ratepayers.
Is it possible to get a copy of that settlement?
You certainly can because it's been filed with the commission.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, and with that, any further questions? Dave?
The letter you received from the Industrial Commission, is that coming up on the agenda?
It is.
Yes, it is.
I mean, what do you think about, you know, just to put it crudely, some other agency telling you your business?
Well, first of all, I want to know whether I want to know.
You're baiting us.
Yeah. Did the whole Industrial Commission sign off on this letter, or did only the North Dakota Pipeline Authority sign off on this letter? I don't know that.
The Industrial Commission approved it. I was a witness to this.
Well. I think that
it's implied in the letter.
The commission needs to take a very is taking a very close look at this matter. I know I have some concerns about what I have heard is being suggested, and we haven't yet met in a work session on this matter. We held an informal hearing last week. That work session will be scheduled in the near future, I would anticipate. And then we'll have a chance to talk about all these issues together. But as you know, the commissioners cannot talk about these issues other than in a public meeting, and that's where we're going to be doing that on admin.
One of the things I'd say, Dale, is that it does illustrate the natural sort of strain, if you will, between an agency whose primary focus is development and an agency whose primary focus is protection. It's a very natural conflict, if you will, and we're all, the three of us are professionals and competent to do our jobs, just like the three on the Industrial Commission are. And I don't see any real problem with it. It may look a little bit funny to people on the outside, but the fact of the matter is, it's very natural for all of us to have this. We all have the same goal in mind, that is to not have gas flared, to see good development and enhance economic opportunities for North Dakotans and protect cultural and natural resources and people.
You know, Dale, I would look at it like that. I mean, there are, in fact, it's probably the standard operating procedure in most states. There are lots of agencies that come before public utility commissions and argue a case one way or another. For example, there are a lot of states where the Attorney General argues before the regulatory commission about certain things because of, you know, whatever their statutory role is, or consumer advocates, so on and so forth. So, I mean, I think Kevin has it right. There is a difference between a promotional agency, which is when you're talking about the transmission authority, its job is to promote. Our job is vastly different than that. Our job is to ensure that the regulatory laws are upheld. Now, how much sway will this have with me or with the commission? I suppose that's yet to be seen. But I would say that from what I have seen in the case so far, it's really a technical legal question for us to answer, more so than the question that they have posed to us. I mean, their concern is with regard to the fact that there's going to be natural gas, that there is natural gas being flared off, and they'd like to see an export route for the natural gas as soon as possible. I wouldn't disagree with that statement at all. I too would like to see as much export capability as we can have from North Dakota. But that doesn't relieve us of our obligation, which is to uphold the statute that relates to when lines have to be sited. And I didn't see anything in their letter that spoke to that in particular. And that's just a question that we have to answer on our own.
You know, the basic issue in this case is, what is a processing facility? The company, Pecan Pipeline, is arguing the processing facility is located down in Chicago. And therefore, the processing facility would mean that if it's located in Chicago, that all the lines that feed into the main pipeline are gathering lines in North Dakota. That would mean all natural gas pipelines would be constructed by this company would become gathering lines. That's a big decision before this commission to make. This decision is a major decision before this commission about what is considered, what we would be citing in the future and what we would not be citing in the future. And without legislative guidance on this matter, I may add.
So if you were to conclude that the pipeline authority's position is correct, then you would you be conceding that all natural gas pipelines in North Dakota that don't go into a processing plant are gathering lines?
All pecan pipeline ones could lead to that.
I always get worried when you hear the word all because you don't know what situation might come up. But, I mean, it does appear that the sole and most important issue in this case is that particular plant that they're running that through, whatever it is, does that constitute a processing plant? Because it's very clear that if it's not a processing plant, then it's a gathering facility and it's not cited. And it's very clear that if it is defined as some sort of process to the oil itself, that it's then, or to the gas itself, then it's not a gathering facility and it is to be cited. So it really does hang on that.
They have been processing natural gas in North Dakota so that it can be used for end use. In the future, they will not be processing gas in North Dakota so it can be used for end use. That whole process will be happening, or part of that process to make it available for end use will be happening in Chicago now, all right? And so it's a matter of what is going to be considered a processing. That's what the whole issue before the commission is, what is a processing plant? And then that leads to the question, is this a gathering line or is it not a gathering line?
To what extent do you think?
This is a large pipeline as well. It's 75 miles, and it is 12-inch? Is that it? 10-inch? 12-inch facility.
I mean, to what extent might your judgment be influenced by, if I understand the case correctly, if you decide that processing takes place in Chicago, then a company has no incentive to construct processing facilities in North Dakota.
Well, and that's Dale, and that therein lies the danger that we always have before us as regulators, and that is to not take so many liberties with the law that we really shirk our greater responsibility. At the same time, we are not just public utility regulators in a state that simply consumes energy. We are regulators in a state that generates and exports energy, and it is very, very important. But if you just take the issue as Susan presents it, it's simply a matter of, you know, is this a processing facility or not, and the ramifications of that. We can determine that within the context of the law as it is written and the intent of the law. But there is another, and it's simple if we can do that. If we can just simply make it, it's a black and white issue, and the facts in the law are very clear, and the facts of the case are very clear, no problem. But there is another, if you will, moral issue involved in that in this case, and that is the flaring of 21 million cubic feet of natural gas every day. That's not an insignificant issue to us as regulators either, who are concerned about the availability of this precious resource, the supply and the growing demand, the fact that it's 16 below zero when you wake up this morning, and we want to keep home heating costs down. All of those things sort of weigh on us, but at the end of the day, it still comes down to the law and the facts in the case. And so it's not an easy solution to draw.
You mentioned, Mr. Whitfield, you mentioned a lack of guidance from the legislature. Do you think that they're going to give you some?
Yes, I do. I think that there's already a bill that has been suggested through that Energy and Transmission Committee that has been suggested. I'm sure that bill will go through changes, et cetera, but there is a vehicle for the legislature to give guidance to the commission on what is a gathering line.
And would that bill, I guess what I'm saying is, do you think that if you don't conclude that this is a gathering line, do you think that legislature might
Their options are always open. Their options are always open with the legislature.
You know, Dale, I think that's their job. They're the policy makers. We are the regulators. So whatever they decide, obviously, is what we would live with. I would say, though, that maybe they ought to bring the issue up because I think it's an important debate in today's climate. You know, it's, again, I don't need to reiterate all the obvious.
This law that we're working with was passed originally by the legislature, and it's been in place for years.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just that the processing plant, question is new because there's different processing that's happening with natural gas these days than there used to be.
Well, as I understand, when I looked at the file, I thought the argument here that that Picon is making is that there's some processing going on, but it's not really.
You know what?
It's wetter than it used to be.
Yeah, as I listened to the informal that we had and other things that I've read in the file, where there's not clarity is the fact that processing is not defined in the statute. It's not defined in the law, and it's tough to get that bright line, and that's what I was really trying to hope to get out of the hearing. I don't know that I have yet, but that there is a bright line somewhere that says this is a processing plant and this isn't. You get the strong sense that within the oil and gas industry, you know, they consider a processing plant just kind of in their common parlance to be, you know, one particular thing, but that may or may not be what the law itself envisions, and that's really where the argument comes down. I mean, the folks that we've heard from within the industry seem to believe that a processing plant is something other than what they're proposing here, but there's not anywhere that anyone can point to say that this is what is one and this is what's not one.
Okay.
At least yet.
To the degree that we have discretion to determine those things where there is a lack of clarity, Dale, you know that we'll do it in a very thoughtful manner with everybody's, you know, all considerations in play. And not the least of which is the important economic value that this gas brings to both industry and consequently then to the state as well as to ultimately to people that purchase and use natural gas.
Do you think it's a fair interpretation? I don't want to beat this.
Sure.
Do you think it's a fair interpretation of their argument that they said that there is some processing?
I do. I think you characterized it correctly. Yes.
It's just not processing.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Yes, I do. And I think that the lack of clarity is in the definition of processing in the law. That's exactly right.
And not
all
just
right.
ours. I don't.
Right.
I mean, I get the sense there isn't really anywhere, you know, either through FERC or other states, there's not a lot of guidance out there with regard to this that I can.
But are the issues that the commission is exploring. All right. Thank you very much. It's been very interesting, but no, I'm ready to be on my way. Thank you. All right, we'll meet for admin in 10 minutes.